It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with two extraordinary Iowa women. Later in the hour, elite runner Lisa Yule will be here. I'll talk with her about her renewed Olympic dreams, her conflicted relationship with running for a living, and her return to Iowa and vet school at Iowa State University. But first, Veronica Hamley of Iowa City is a woman who's never been easy to categorize. She has mild cerebral palsy, but she's not what you would call disabled. She was also born male, but has always felt like a female. She has generously agreed to share her story with us today. Good morning, Veronica.
Good morning. It's a pleasure being here on Iowa Public Radio.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being here. And I want to talk first about having mild cerebral palsy, because obviously this is something that you've been coping with since birth.
Yes.
And it's very clear that you have no mental impairment whatsoever. As you were growing up with a mild disability, how did that affect you in school?
I think the only way it really affected me in school was social relationships. In junior high and high school, I was in regular classes. I didn't always do the same thing in PE that everybody else did. The instructor might put me on the bicycle, and I might ride a stationary bicycle for most of the period, but he kept me active. And that was the only really difference I had than all of the other, all of my other classmates.
Mm-hmm. Were you in a special classroom when you were in elementary school?
Well, yeah, when I was in elementary school, I was. But it was the kind of thing where I still felt isolated. A lot of the other kids in my classes were in wheelchairs. Some of them needed assisted devices to talk. So, you know, I was the only one that was free of assisted devices, no crutches, wheelchair, anything like that.
Right. And some of the other kids that would have been in your special classes would have been dealing with mental challenges as well, right?
Oh, of course. Yes.
So you felt different from them.
Mm-hmm.
But you also felt different from the other kids.
Yes. Yeah.
How did your family deal with that? Did you talk about that at home?
I don't know that we really talked about it at home, but my parents are great people, and they encouraged me to do whatever I want. They encouraged me to just give it my all. And kind of live the best I could. So that kind of related to me where, you know, I did not see myself as disabled.
Being in that special class in elementary school, though, I'm sure the other kids at school categorized you pretty quickly.
Oh, definitely.
Were you able to make friends with children who were in the regular classes?
You know, I had a couple in elementary school, but not that many. But, you know, still, you know, there were all the names on the playground. I wore glasses, so I was called Four Eyes and so forth. You know, the typical things that children call each other. So, you know, there was a lot of pain from that.
One of the themes of this conversation that we'll come back to again and again is how we categorize people. And, you know, humans look for patterns. So when we meet somebody, we like, especially children, like to put them in these different categories.
Yes.
And try to figure out people.
Yes.
I would guess that a lot of people throughout your life have underestimated your intelligence. How does that come across to you? How do people treat you differently because they don't understand?
You know, I would say that people have never really underestimated my intelligence, but they've underestimated my abilities. And many times a year, somebody will say, I'm just amazed at what you just did. I didn't think that you could do that, and you proved me wrong. And that is such a great feeling to have somebody say that to me.
Wow. So you find out about it sometimes later after you've already proven that their assumptions about you are not accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Give me an example. What kinds of things do you do that people don't think you should be able to?
Oh, my gosh. Gosh, you really put me on the spot here, Charity. I think I'm stronger than a lot of people think I am. I work out. Mm-hmm. I exercise quite a bit.
You live independently?
I live very independently. I cook for myself. I drive. It's been a while since I've gotten that, but a lot of people say, oh, you don't drive yourself, do you? And I said, yeah, I've had my license since I was 16 and been driving that long. So I think a lot of people do put people in categories. They think that you're disabled, and they make these assumptions that you're as disabled as maybe somebody who's wheelchair bound.
Right. So you are incredibly capable, but there are some limitations to what you can do. And I know that this has been an issue with employment.
Yes.
What do you feel your limitations are?
My limitations are in doing things that require a lot of manual dexterity. So I could never be a cashier at Hy-Vee or Target. It's just too fast-paced for me. I'm not very good at typing. Normally, I cannot pass a typing test. And I'm not good at carrying glasses of like liquid or food. So I'd make it absolutely terrible waitress because, you know, those are things that just those manual dexterity things are things that I can't do. But there's so many things that I can. And, you know, that's what's hard, getting people to look past the things that I can't do to see the things that I can.
With a mild disability, and there are a lot of ways in our society that we have come to assist people with disabilities. Do you find that some of that assistance is not available to you because you are so able?
Yes. Vocational rehabilitation has a three-tier system where people that have physical impairments where they need assistance, they can't do daily tasks, or they have some kind of disorder such as ADHD, other cognitive disorders, and they get the services first, since, after all, voc rehab is an underfunded service. So people like me are usually left till the end of the fiscal year. So you might have, you know, if I applied at the wrong time, I might have to wait 10 to 12 months for services.
Wow. Have you had a hard time finding jobs because people underestimate what you're able to do?
All the time. I've been laughed out of interviews. People see my altered gait when I walk into a room, and you can see it in people's faces that they make assumptions right away.
Can you tell me about a work experience that you've had where this has been a serious issue?
as in someplace I actually worked, or
right. Yeah. And you don't have to name an organization, but can you give me an example?
Yeah, I was a dishwasher somewhere, and things were hard. You know, it was not always easy for me to wash some of the dishes, big pans and stuff. Bussing tables was difficult because I wasn't allowed to take a cart into the dining room. So, you know, then, you know, it would be very slow because I could only carry so much at a time. And that kind of made for a stressful work environment where I was going too slow for the managers, but the accommodations that would have helped me get faster were not granted to me.
Have you been fired, do you feel, because of your disability?
Yeah, yeah. I was fired from an insurance company in 2009 because they said you can't type fast enough. And it was somewhere where I had at one time an accommodation. And well, with any large company, bosses change. You change departments overnight. And my accommodations were taken away for me. And then I was ultimately terminated because they said I couldn't type fast enough.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Veronica Hamley of Iowa City. She is a woman who has never been easy to categorize. We're talking right now about having mild cerebral palsy. She's very able to do very many things, but dealing with this mild disability has been a challenge her entire life. She was also born male, but has always felt like a female. We'll talk about that challenge in a moment as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with two extraordinary Iowa women. Coming up a little bit later in the show, I will talk with elite runner Lisa Yule. We'll talk about her plans for the Olympics in 2016. We'll also talk about her move back to Iowa and her return to Iowa State University for vet school. That's coming up in a little while. But with me right now is Veronica Hamley of Iowa City. And as we've been talking about, she is a woman who's never been easy to categorize. She has mild cerebral palsy, but she is able to live independently, drive, and do many, many things on her own. She was also born male, but has always felt like a female. And before we move on to that part of your story, Veronica, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, we talked about being in school and, you know, getting teased on the playground and stuff like that. Have you also experienced harassment as an adult?
A little bit, but I'd say not as much. I think by the time people get to adulthood, they've hopefully matured. And a little bit, only on probably about one job.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You grew up in Decorah, where you graduated from high school there. Then you went to Ellsworth Community College. Your family moved to International Falls in Minnesota. So
yeah.
You've lived there. You've also lived a number of times in Coralville and Iowa City. You've returned to the area frequently.
Yes.
Do you find that the Iowa City area is a place where you fit in better than other places?
Yeah, I would say I fit in better. I would give anything to move back to Decorah, but, you know, Decorah is a typical small town where not everybody who graduates from high school there can stay there. But I find that Iowa City is the right fit for me. It's not too big, not too small, and the people here are just wonderful.
When you were growing up, you were coping with cerebral palsy, but you also were born a boy.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start to feel like that wasn't you?
Probably a little bit in high school, but, you know, it really started, I think, when I was in college, because a lot of it had to do with the internet. When I graduated from high school, the internet was in its infancy. Not everybody had it. Not everybody had computers. So going to college, I was able to connect with other people, but still, I hid it for a long, long time.
When did you actually come to terms with it yourself? Did you resist that idea for a long time?
I resisted the idea. I didn't want to tell people because I've always had such a hard time making friends, and the risk of losing the friends that I did have outweighed coming out to people. But then when I was here at the university, enough was enough, and I came out.
It's one thing, you know, many people come out about many different things, and being gay or being a lesbian has become so much more accepted over the years. But to come out and say, I am actually a woman, although the person that you see before you looks like a man, do you, having friends who may have had the experience of coming out in their way, do you think that's harder?
I think that it is a lot harder than just coming out as gay or lesbian, because your whole life changes, and there's not always the support for trans people as there is for gays and lesbians. There's not always that social support. There's still kind of this divide between LGB and the T community. But then also on top of that, you have a medical system that does not really help transgendered people. You have a DSM that still labels it as a disorder. So, you know, there are difficulties, but growing up with a disability and having gone through discrimination and name calling and so forth, coming out was nothing for me.
Really?
I really have such a thick skin, and Iowa City is just a great community that it just worked for me.
Tell me about coming out to your family. How did that go?
I think I sent my mom an email, even though my mom is my best friend. She always has. My parents support me financially, and I don't know where I would be without them. But I came out to her in an email, I believe, and it was good. She came around really quick. My dad, it was a little harder. You know, he'd called me one name for 33 or so years. So, you know, changing to another name can be difficult. So, but they're loving and supportive.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have a sister who does not really support me. So we've always had a strained relationship. Again, it relates back to friends. She had way more friends than I did in school, and I was always jealous, and there was a lot of friction there. So then coming out on top of that just really strained the relationship. So we're not that close.
You tried to live in International Falls with your parents. And was that after coming out?
That was twice. That was before and after. And before, it's a small town, and I think northern Minnesota is notorious for not always accepting outsiders. So I was never really accepted there. I never had friends my own age the 6.5 years that I lived there before coming back to school in Iowa City. And then returning there after I graduated and being out there, it was a very lonely 10 months. There were friends that I did have that no longer wanted to hang out. So, you know, it was a lonely 10 months, and I'm just blessed that I was given the opportunity to come back to Iowa City.
You say given the opportunity. How were you given the opportunity, or was it your choice?
I was applying for jobs in Iowa City. I think I was also applying for some jobs in Minneapolis, but Minneapolis was not where I really wanted to be. And Coralville Parks and Recreation called me. I had interned there in the summer of 2013, and one of the program supervisors said, "Hey, I'd like to hire you. Can you be here in a week?" So I packed everything up and I came down here, and it's been great.
Not having friends in International Falls was very isolating, was very challenging for you, but you had your parents.
Yes.
And in moving back to Iowa City, it was just you. How did you find a community?
I wouldn't really say that I have much of a community in Iowa City. A lot of my fellow classmates that I graduated with have left. And I know so many good people in Iowa City, but I don't really have a community to call my own. I don't do things with other people because I get tired of asking people. And I've been in vicious cycles where people have said, "Oh, let's hang out," but then they cancel on me, and then I ask again and I ask again, and you know, that's not the greatest feeling in the world. So you know, it is hard. I wish that I had some strong female friends, but I don't. So outside of work, I'm either at the gym working out or I'm just home by myself.
It's been 3 years since you made the decision to come out.
I think it'll be 4.
Okay, we're coming up on 4.
4.
Beyond your family support, have you had medical support?
Yes. There's a wonderful LGBT clinic at the University Hospital. There's an LGBT counseling clinic at the College of Education. So there is support out there, but there's a lot of things that insurance will not cover.
In preparing for this interview, you told us you were uncomfortable with the term transgender. And I'm curious because we've been talking about how so many of the things in your life, you just haven't quite fallen into the categories that other people around you fell into. But there's a word. There's a word that describes some of your experience. Why aren't you comfortable with that term?
a lot of people are comfortable with that term. And I don't want to disparage anybody that is comfortable with that term. But having grown up with a disability, something that people see right when they walk in the room, something that I think deters people from being friends with me, the last thing I wanted is another label. And I consider myself female. Sometimes I talk like I've always been. So, you know, holding on to the term transgender is just not something I wanted to do.
There have been a lot of high-profile media stories about transgender individuals.
Yes.
There has been a lot of conversation about children who feel that they are in the wrong body and whether it's okay for their parents to help them transition or not. A lot of controversy about that. But of course, the story that has been dominating headlines lately is former Olympian Bruce Jenner transitioning to being a woman, and being part of the Kardashian clan and all of that has made him a target for a lot of jokes, that kind of thing. When you see that story, such a high-profile story, how does that make you feel?
I'm sorry, who are the Kardashians? No, seriously, you know, I don't wrap myself into celebrity news. I'm more concerned over what's going on in the Ukraine than I am pop culture. So, you know, I heard that Bruce Jenner is going through a transition, but aside from that, I really don't follow it.
Do you feel like, even in the almost 4 years since you came out, do you feel like it's become easier for people in your situation?
I'd like to hope so. The government has made strides. From what I understand, Medicare now pays for surgeries and so forth that trans people need. So hopefully after a while, other insurances will follow. President Obama has made it harder to discriminate against government contractors. So I think the movement is in the right direction, but it's been a long time coming, and I think we have a long way to go.
You work with kids. And I wonder if it worries you to be open with your story, knowing how much you love your job, and that some people may not understand.
You know, no, I don't worry about that. I think everywhere in Iowa City, Coralville, I'm accepted. And this stuff like that doesn't really worry me.
In working with kids, do you have an opportunity sometimes to help somebody who doesn't feel like they fit in? Do you see that in the kids that you help out with?
You know, I really don't in our group of kids. You know, part of me does wish maybe we had somebody that kind of grew up like me when I was in camps and so forth. I did latch on to counselors and so forth. So part of me does wish I could give back in that way, but the opportunity hasn't really presented itself.
Well, there may be many more opportunities.
I do hope so, yeah.
Veronica, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you so much.
Veronica Hamley of Iowa City She has mild cerebral palsy. We were talking about the challenges of growing up with a mild disability. She was also born male, but has always felt like a female. We've been talking about what it has been like to come out and to transition to living as a woman. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with Lisa Yule. She made a name for herself as a runner in high school back when she was Lisa Cole from Fort Dodge. She also ran for Iowa State University and competed in the 2012 Olympic Games. I'll talk with her about life as a professional runner and her Olympic dreams for 2016, also her return to Iowa and her return to Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.